Reading from the first chapter of Jeremiah, verses 1 to 10. The words of Jeremiah, son of Hilkiah, one of the priests of Anatoth, in the territory of Benjamin. The word of the Lord came to him in the 13th year of the reign of Josiah, son of Ammon, king of Judah, and through the reign of Jehoiakim, son of Josiah, king of Judah, down to the 5th month of the 11th year of Zedekiah, son of Josiah, king of Judah, when the people of Jerusalem went into exile. The word of the Lord came to me, saying, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. I appointed you as a prophet to the nations." "Ah, sovereign Lord," I says, "I do not know how to speak. I am only a child." For the Lord said to me, "Do not say, 'I am only a child.' You must go to everyone I send you to and say whatever I command you. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you and will rescue you, declares the Lord." Then the Lord stretched out his hand and touched my mouth and said to me, "Now I have put my words in your mouth. See, today I appoint you over the nations and kingdoms to uproot and tear down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant." Rachel, come and lead us in interpreting God's word.
It is good to be here today. I'm glad for this opportunity. It feels like we've been here for now a little bit over a year, and Charlottesville Mennonite now seems like a home like no other, so it is a joy to be here. Well, it was springtime, about 11-ish years ago. The trees were budding, tulips were blooming, it was beautiful. The dark haze of that northern Indiana sky, if you've ever been there, you know what it looks like, was finally lifting. Spring had come. And well, with spring, graduation loomed. And with graduation looming ahead, the plethora of the traditional questions came, right? What's next for you following graduation? Where are you going? What are your plans? Aren't you excited about this next step of life? Well, to be honest, I was, absolutely. And I wasn't. I mean, don't get me wrong. I was ready to take a break from writing way too many pages, way too late in the night. And I was ready to stop reading some books for a little bit of time that people projected upon me that I didn't have to choose for myself. But I wasn't quite ready to leave the safe cocoon of the predictability of the student schedule and to say goodbye to some amazing friendships. But perhaps trumping it all was just the unknown of the future. What was next? What would I do? Well, you know, it should be easy for an elementary education major to figure out her next steps, right? I mean, you graduate with an LEd degree, go get a teaching job, either in Goshen or somewhere else, right? I mean, not too difficult. But with my type A personality, I already done that, you know, and I already had applications out in all the school districts. I actually even had some numerous job interviews and was even offered a few teaching positions that would have been fantastic. So what's the problem, you're probably wondering? Isn't the next step obvious? Take a job? But, you know, not really. I mean, even though I was so excited for all of these great options to choose from, I just didn't feel that fire in my belly. In the pit of my stomach, I knew something just wasn't right yet. I didn't feel that passion, despite the fact that I loved teaching. So in good conscience, I didn't feel like I could totally commit to anything yet. And I wondered, what in the world is wrong with me? You know, living in a state of unknown was difficult. It was confusing. It was exhausting. It was almost debilitating to a point. I mean, on one hand, I felt like I should use my degree completely and fully for the thousands of dollars that were paid for it, out of a sense of duty and obligation, right? But on the other hand, I just didn't want to go through life ho-hum. I just didn't want to wake up feeling so-so about my job. I wanted to feel called to it. I wanted to find deep joy and meaning to what I got up to do every day. I wanted to feel energized and feel like I was truly making a difference in this world. So what to do? Well, I finally hit the bottom. Pressures were too high, expectations felt too great, I felt too alone in this discernment process. And late one Friday night, a few weeks prior to graduation, I had one of these come to Jesus moments. Maybe you've had some of your own before. I cried out to God, I can't take it anymore! I'm done! I don't know what to do, I don't know what's wrong with me, I should be thrilled, but I'm not. I want to be where you want me to be because I recognize that this is the place where I will find the most joy, is where you are calling me to be. So I'm letting go. Help me out. Time is running out. I kid you not. I kid you not. The next morning, Saturday morning, 7:30 a.m., the phone rings, waking me up from a deep sleep. I wondered, who in the world would be calling me at this hour? When I answered it, the voice on the other end surprised me. It was not my mother. Rachel, this is Fred Littweiler calling. I'm on the pastoral search committee here at College Mennonite Church looking for a minister of youth and young adults. And your names come up. We've seen you at work and have observed your gifts and think you'd be a great fit for this ministry. Would you consider it? Came to find out that that is when their elders meeting met. It was at 6 o'clock a.m. on Saturday morning. Anyhow, what? Excuse me? I mean, were you looking, did you call the wrong number? Were you looking for a different Rachel ministry? My mind was racing. I'm like, ew, yuck, absolutely not. This is just, no. Seriously, I don't want to be one of those boring pastor types. This is definitely not what I had in mind. I mean, I don't have any training. Shoot. At Goshen College, you have to take 3 Bible religion classes. I only took 2 and petitioned for my Anabaptist history class to count as my 3rd. I mean, I'm supposed to teach? What's going on? I didn't know how to respond to Fred's inquiry, so all that came to my mind was, I don't know. Well, Fred replied wisely, if you don't know, at least come in and talk with us about it. So I did. I was willing to check it out, open to new ideas, to new possibilities. And as I met with them and listened to what they were looking for in this position, I felt that heat rise inside. I felt that passion rear its head and felt a true internal sense of call towards this. I mean, there's so much more to my story that I don't have time to get into now about how it's all worked out and has shaped my life and been my call has been honed since then. But looking back, this was the single most defining moment that altered the course of my direction in life. And it all started with a call. Not a phone call, but a deeper sense of call, a sense of purpose. A call that stemmed from others observing my own unique gifts and abilities and inviting me to use them to build up the body of Christ for the sake of the world. I mean, so today I'm sharing a bit from my own personal story, but this isn't really about me. I mean, isn't this the call for all of us? Now, not everyone is or will be called to go into formal pastoral ministry, but I do believe that each one of us has unique passions and gifts, abilities, and talents of which we are called to share for the healing and hope of the world. Now, in Jeremiah, our text today, we hear of another call story. And it begins so beautifully with God pointing out to Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I set you apart to be appointed as a prophet to the nations. Before you were, I knew you. I knew you. I mean, wow. Consider the implications of that statement. Being known by God. Being known and chosen just as we are. I mean, isn't that what we all long to hear? That we matter? That we have worth? That we're special? That we're chosen by someone? Now, I think it is important to note the difference between being special because you're chosen and chosen because you're special. I mean, just as God appointed Jeremiah to be the very voice of God, not because he was special, but because he was chosen, he was willing to be used. So too God calls out to each of us to use our gifts for the healing of the world, not because we're special, but because God chose us first. There's a big difference there. And here at Charlottesville Mennonite, I mean, we've just entered into another school calendar year. Sunday school starting up, new programs are ramping up, the new UVA students are sometimes here. Family and friends that find Charlottesville their homes for the next few years have been welcome to join us for as long as they will have us. And here we stand at the door of new opportunities and vision for what God has for us this year and for the years to come. Where is God calling us, Charlottesville Mennonite? Who are we called to be and to become? Now, as I sit and reflect on these questions and listen for the dreams of God, I'm becoming more and more convinced that our church is called to become a culture of call. And what I mean by culture of call is a place where people are nurtured in their faith and there's space made for and opportunities to discover and to use their gifts. But here's the kicker. Spiritual formation is not for us alone. It can't stop here. A culture of call always has to see formation in terms of transformation. So how are we being called to use our gifts and passions for the sake of others, for the healing and hope of our community, to make a change, to make a difference in the greater world? Lauren Swartzendruber, the president of Eastern Mennonite University, wrote a few years ago in the Mennonite magazine that the world needs the Mennonite witness. He says, and I'll read it here, "To claim a particular theological tradition, such as Anabaptist, is not to arrogantly suggest that we have the corner on truth. Over the past 3 decades, many people have said to me, don't give the strengths of the Anabaptist witness up, because the world needs the Mennonite voice now more than ever." This, I feel, is a growing edge for the Mennonite tradition. We're used to being the quiet in the land. We're used to being in the world, but not of the world. We join voice with Jeremiah as he protests God's call to him. God, I don't know how to speak. I'm only a child. I mean, we hold a lot of excuses for not knowing how to proceed forward. Perhaps the task just seems too great. There's too much hurt. There's too much pain. We don't know where to start, so why get started? I mean, maybe we feel cynical. How can we really make a difference? I mean, or maybe we're afraid of losing our tradition if our comfort zones are stretched too much. But when we're paralyzed by these thoughts, I think we run the risk of seeing ourselves and the church as created for our own self-preservation. We see ourselves as being chosen because we're special, rather than the other way around. And so we fail to grow new ministries and new leaders because we're comfortable with the way things already are and work hard at preserving it at all costs. Living like this seems to drain energy rather than building it up. And at the base of all of the excuses, I believe, resides fear. Fear of inadequacy, fear of change, fear of the unknown, fear of losing control. We hear, there's not enough money. There's not enough space. We're too small. I'm too busy. There's not enough help. But like God responds to Jeremiah, so too God responds to us. "Don't be afraid. I am with you." You see, this call is anchored in who God is, not with the limitation of who has been called. So perhaps fear is an appropriate response. I mean, we see ourselves with all of our warts and limitations, and we wonder, how can we do it? Yet God sees our potential, and God sees all that can be and still invites us to enter into that dream. Now, Jeremiah was called to be the voice of God during the time of political and religious unrest. I mean, there was revolt and rebellion, captivity and exile was going on all around him. I mean, it was crazy times, right? But perhaps it wasn't too unlike what it is today. I mean, I wonder if we're not in a similar situation. If we look around here, living in the United States, I mean, our lives are not necessarily physically being threatened or attacked. We're not being thrown into exile. But perhaps if we look closer at the very fabric of our society's interaction, are we not really in exile? Are not our souls and spirits being held captive? I mean, I look around and I see the clutch and the yearning for possessions and extravagant wealth. The greed our nation has had within these last few years is now catching up with us, leaving our homes, our retirement plans, and the illusion that we control our lives with a precarious future. So maybe money isn't enough. And look at how society views time. The busier are we, the better. We work all the time to find our worth. We live a myth. And again, the ugly head of fear rears up. Only this time we fear each other. We fear those different than us, those who speak different than us, those who look different than us, those who think different than us. We raise walls to exclude. We create legislature to limit access. We broadcast differences instead of highlighting commonalities. Where is the voice of God in all of this? I mean, what are we called to speak into this day and age where fear and it's all about me rule? What word of the Lord does God have for us to share? Now, in my work and conversations over the last few years with Anabaptist congregations, two words surface again and again and again and again. The great pillars of the Anabaptist Mennonite tradition: peace and service. When I was a pastor in Denver, Colorado, we had young people just streaming into our congregation saying, "I just want to serve, man. I just want to serve. Have you heard of John Howard Yoder? He's changed my life. I just had to find a Mennonite Anabaptist community." I mean, the Sunday school class that meets in this corner over here has been studying and discussing the book, The Naked Anabaptist. What does Anabaptism look like when all the shoe fly pies, quilts, Yoders, Millers, and Nussbaums have been stripped away? What is at the core? And how do we connect this naked Anabaptism with those people who are living by and large in this post-Christian world, desperately seeking an alternative meaning towards life and faith? There's something that this world now more than ever is longing for, seeking out, eyes wide with wonder at this alternative way of living faith. I mean, as we're within the Anabaptist tradition, it's sometimes hard to see out of the little bubble we've created. I mean, if you grew up in the Mennonite faith, your core beliefs seem commonplace. And we can often, I think, get lackadaisical or maybe even cynical about them. But outside this bubble, these values and beliefs are eye-widening, earth-shattering, mind-blowing. Being from within, this is really hard for us to understand. But the world is truly looking for a real, authentic faith that interconnects life in faith, peace and justice, simplicity, and a true sense of community in real life-breathing ways. They long for a faith that moves beyond religion and control and shows up, that really, truly shows up. And they're finding it, surprise, within the Anabaptist theology. So how are we, how am I, how are you being called to do our part to speak and live and move and breathe into this reality? What witness do we have to share today? And in this world of chaos and fear, how as a church are we being called to breathe peace in body, mind, and soul? To offer forgiveness to one another as a radical act of witness in a world full of hatred and retribution. I mean, often I think we think of peace as this whole pie-in-the-sky ideal of ending wars and creating a world full of rainbows and unicorns, right? But I want to challenge you to think more intimately as well. How is God inviting us to bring peace into our families, into our neighborhoods and communities, and even here into our congregation? What might peace look like in these places? And how does actually living in this way dramatically witness to a world that is desperately seeking peace in all the wrong places? And for service, this is a subversive act in the midst of the world of me. What might it mean to live in a way that helps others, that reaches beyond our own wants and desires? Maybe, just maybe, we make things too complicated. Because maybe it just begins with going next door and meeting your neighbors. In this world of me, sometimes we don't even have relationships with people that live 100 yards away. So how might reaching out beyond ourselves to give time to another seeking connection embody God's love, even when it might not be necessarily the most convenient or comfortable time for me? Because really, it's not about me. It's not about you. It's never been about me. It's never been about you. It's about what God is wanting to do through me and through you. As we allow the Spirit of God to continue to form our lives, surprise, we find that God is already at work using us to transform the world around us. Living passionately to follow God and Christ in life, staying rooted, always staying rooted and grounded in Him, leaves a mark in the lives of our children. Because they see church as more of a way of life that actually makes a difference in the lives of those who attend and in the world around them. They see parents and other adults living out of a space where their own faith actually influences the way they live. And this, my friends, this is more influential than all the Sunday school classes will ever be. Eleanor Snyder, she wrote in her doctorate of ministry thesis on the faith development of children, she said, "There's nothing more impactful to the shape of faith development than for children to see adults in their lives living out a vibrant faith. To see that coming to church actually matters and makes a difference. And this is the difference in how we live and how we respond to others in the world." So instead of seeing the work of the church as filling committees and going to countless meetings, what might it mean to actually live out of where your passions lie? To use your own God-given gifts and abilities, and to invest in these things rather than just putting your time in, filling the slot, saying yes because you feel guilty saying no. In other words, where is the Spirit leading you? How are you being called to create a culture of call here and to live in a way that the Spirit of God is seen, felt, and experienced? Where does your longest desire meet the world's deepest need? Because it's at this cross section, that's where you're called to respond. And surprise, you'll have more than enough energy to do it, because it stems not only out of the core of who you are, but who God has also created you to be. Even before you were, God was. So what voice is God giving us here collectively at Charlottesville Mennonite Church? I don't know. However, I think as we continue to discern these questions together, I trust that as we stay rooted and connected to God and to the Spirit of Christ that is moving, transforming, and always forming, that God will lead us into this unknown and that we don't need to be afraid. Because like Jeremiah, God too is reaching out to us, touching our mouths, putting words into them. And as a culture of the called, may we be faithful like Jeremiah in not only proclaiming these words, but so too in living them out, so that our children will be formed into the faithful people of God who will use their gifts to transform the world. May God use us in ways far beyond our imaginations as we seek and live into this call. May God bless us. Amen.